Welcome, friends. I recently was having a Dokusan conversation with someone who said, it seems to me like the cause of most of our problems, most of our suffering, is actually greed and hate, as opposed to delusion. And we spend so much time talking about delusion and the wisdom teachings that are the antidote to this. And so what's that all about? And I said to her, yeah, I think that's true, that greed and hate are the cause of so much of our own problems and problems in the world. But the root of greed and hate is delusion. So that's why we emphasize it so much. And I think that Buddha Dharma may be somewhat unusual in terms of spiritual traditions in the world, in that it really emphasizes the delusion part. That's why we spend all this time in meditation, studying our own mind and intricacies of how we create the illusion of self and other. That's the basic kind of root delusion that gives rise to greed and hate and anger and so on. Whereas I think all spiritual traditions recognize the problem of greed and hate and emphasize trying to work with that, to let that go. So we might even say that the point of all these wisdom teachings about no self and emptiness and these Zen koans and all of these teachings that might seem like they're not so practical are all for the purpose, in the end, of releasing greed and hate, and therefore ending suffering for ourselves and others. Especially in the Zen tradition, there's not so much talk about greed and hate. But I would understand that's the context for all the Zen stories and so on. It's a recognized thing that our basic delusion is the cause of greed and hate, so let's go right to the root and work on that. But it's also good to look at greed and hate, of course. So we have practices we can cultivate even without realizing the emptiness of all things and so on. And practices that are then enhanced by wisdom of the nature of reality, and practices that also help to open to the wisdom of the nature of reality. In particular, loving kindness and compassion are very important teachings of the Buddha, and in the tradition that Buddha set rolling. Loving kindness, or in Sanskrit, maitri, in Pali, metta, means loving kindness or friendliness. Maitri, metta is related to the word for friend. So loving kindness it's an attitude of mind. Of course, it manifests in actions, but it's the mind that wishes others and ourselves, wishes all beings to be happy. So in the Metta Sutta, that's the punchline, right? It's may all beings be happy. That's the essence of that sutra. May all beings be happy. And compassion, or karuna, in Sanskrit and Pali, is very similar. But compassion is more like the wish that all beings others and myself be free from suffering. So loving kindness is the wish for everyone to be happy. Compassion is the wish for everyone to be free from suffering. Almost the same thing, but one's kind of a positive wish and one's a kind of wish stated in the negative, wish to eliminate something. And in some ways, compassion may be more direct, because it's like we can think of someone or be with someone and have this wish, may they be free from suffering. I don't even know what their happiness will look like, but I can see their suffering right here. It's very obvious. May that be lifted. May they be free from that. Whereas the wish for them to be happy is a little more abstract, maybe. It's a little bit more like a vision we have of their potential happiness, of which everyone has the potential. But we might, envision it in some way that's kind of abstract, or it doesn't really have to do with the person in front of us. The wish for the way we think they might be happy might be kind of different from the way that they would actually come to be happy. Whereas just the wish, we can see suffering so clearly. So in that way, I think it's a very direct thing. But they work together, and they're like two sides of a coin, and one always implies the other. But it's nice to think about both halves. May all beings be happy, and sometimes we wish, and have the causes of happiness. Because that's how happiness happens. It arises due to conditions. May those conditions be present for everyone so that happiness arises, and may they be free from suffering and the conditions of suffering, because suffering arises from conditions. So may those conditions not arise anymore for everyone. I thought today to just discuss a little bit loving kindness in particular. The wish that everyone be happy. And so traditionally there's some meditations that can be done to kind of cultivate this. So with all of these practices, although they do result in actual, manifestation in our actions in the world, Buddhist practice is almost always based on like a mind training. It's not so much like force yourself to do some good deed. Although sometimes that's very effective. Just, you don't feel like it, but just do it. And then the feeling starts to come from doing it. I think that's also valuable. But often the emphasis is on like training the mind, training our habits. It's kind of like that. Like our mind is always habituated to certain patterns. And to kind of cultivate a loving kindness practice is to kind of retrain it in a new direction. Or if we're already quite kind, there's no end to this practice, right? We can just cultivate deeper and deeper kindness and extend it more and more to more beings, human and non-human. All sentient beings suffer, so we wish them all to be happy. And so in doing this practice, it's sometimes taught in this kind of gradual way, like we start with the kind of easiest to work with and kind of work up to the more difficult. And it may not be the most easiest, but a nice place to start is with ourself, which is kind of an interesting thing because we're talking about these selfless practices of bodhisattvas that are concerned for the welfare, happiness, and freedom of all beings, and giving up our own self-concern and self-obsession is the kind of bodhisattva path. But even though that's so, we have to start, it's generally agreed upon, with ourselves. And there's a place in the sutras, in the Udana sutras from the early teachings of the Buddha, where the Buddha says, whoever loves him or herself will never harm another. So that's quite interesting. whoever loves herself will never harm another. So it's okay. And it's more than okay. I think we have to come to love ourselves. We have to clarify what that means. Like, it doesn't mean to love ourselves in some really proud or narcissistic kind of way. Like, I am just the greatest on earth. I just love me. It's not quite like that. It's more like, may I be happy. You know? May I have general well-being. And also, we generally with these things, we can wish all kinds of happiness, but as practitioners, we maybe come to recognize that our most basic and really truly flourishing happiness comes from basic like peace and sanity and not being too anxious. So like Zazen is a practice to cultivate our own happiness. And that type of practice of like relaxing and enjoying the present moment, the most simple thing, right, is often, I think as practitioners we know that often this is the greatest happiness. It's not that exciting, but it's deeply peaceful, deeply nourishing, most happy. So from a kind of practice point of view, my Zen practice really flourish so that I can really find ease and free-flowing freedom in the midst of this difficult life. May all beings find the mind of Zazen, even if they've never heard of Zen or don't do any formal meditation practice. May they find, you know, relaxation and presence and enjoy the simplicity of life as it arises. And I think that's what we can wish most for people. It's the greatest thing. If everybody had that, I'd have no complaints. And starting with ourselves, in not a narcissistic way, but just genuine, may I be at ease, may I have this happiness that then I can share with others. And sometimes it's quite hard to wish that for ourselves, interestingly. And maybe some people it's not. I know for myself, when I first heard that, I actually had some resistance to it. I thought, and I think this is from, you know, previous mind training about the Bodhisattva path. That's like, give up your, you don't matter. Give yourself up and just live for all beings. Your own happiness is like not really that important. There's that implication sometimes in these Bodhisattva teachings, which I think is a little bit mistaken. There's some point to it, but if we take it too literally like that, it undermines being able to let ourselves just enjoy this moment, which I think we do actually need to do, even as a Bodhisattva, to wish happiness for others. So sometimes it is hard to say, may I be happy. Maybe no one has that problem, but I have to confess, there's like a little, still even a little cringe, just slight, it's not too bad, but a little, it's easier for me to say, may all beings be happy, or may you be happy. I have no reservations about it, even if I might forget to do that a lot of the time. But I might have some reservations, may I be happy? I feel like a little, almost like guilty to say that. Yeah. So I've heard some instructions, particularly, I think this is maybe particularly for Americans, maybe feel this way more than others. And one instruction that I find actually works is, if you have that problem, you have a little resistance saying, may I be happy. and have the causes of happiness. To say, may this person, you make it a little bit like third person. And I think, and actually I find that a little bit easier to do. May this person, or even like, may this body and mind be happy. It's much easier. And it may be because if we have that issue, it may be because we have this sense that that the kind of reified I, the independent self, is kind of actually an illusion. There is this conventional person and this body and mind experience, but anything that kind of reifies the separate self, big capital underlined I, may I be happy. Maybe there's some wisdom behind, like a little bit of cringe there. I don't know. But recognizing that we're not actually wishing like some reified self to be happy. We're wishing for this body and mind experience that we can't deny is happening from birth to death. May this one in a moment-to-moment way be happy. Okay, that's okay. We can easily feel guilty about being happy. The Buddha even had that he was doing all these ascetic practices. He didn't feel guilty about that. I don't mind being hard on myself. And then you maybe know this classic story, right? After years of this self-mortification kind of practice, he remembered as a child when he was sitting in the shade on a summer day under a tree, and he was just totally relaxed in the present and had this kind of blissful concentration. He entered like a meditative concentration, and he remembered that in the midst of all this self-mortification, and said, could that be the way to enlightenment? And his first impulse was like, no, that's too pleasurable. I'm not in the pleasure path here. And then he eventually came to see, no, I think it's okay. It's a kind of pleasure that's just a natural pleasure of being. It's not a totally attached, self-indulgent pleasure. So he finally got up the courage to let himself relax and just be in his life. And that turned out that was the path to enlightenment. It wasn't so much that moment was complete enlightenment, but that's the direction that he shifted in his practice. This is a book by Alan Wallace, Boundless Heart, about loving kindness and compassion. You maybe have heard this story, but this is like the direct story about this unique thing in our culture that if you haven't heard, I think it's worth repeating, because if you go to the classic texts of, you know, Indian Buddhism and so on, they sometimes don't address this kind of thing. In our society, we seem to be particularly afflicted by low self-esteem, self-contempt, and self-denigration. This is often what's preventing our own happiness. It's very common, especially among Americans. It's not unheard of in Europe, it seems like, according to his experience. He thinks there's less in Europe. But they seem to be less subject to this type of affliction than Americans. And then there are other cultures, such as the Tibetans, for whom that whole mindset seems utterly bizarre. When I was studying in a monastery in India, one day the abbot told me, of course, we never think or talk about our own faults. We only talk about the faults of others. And I countered that. I think and talk about my faults a lot. It's a big issue for me, Alan Wallace says. And he wouldn't believe me. He thought I was pulling his leg, and I couldn't persuade him otherwise. Isn't that amazing? And then later at this conference with the Dalai Lama, someone brought up this teaching of loving kindness that says in the Theravada tradition, you can develop it first for yourself, and that this seems indispensable, especially in America, because this issue of self-contempt is so strong. And if you skip that first step, loving kindness toward yourself, people might maintain the position, I'm no good, but I hope you're happy. And this is not a good foundation for loving kindness practice. And she asked His Holiness the Dalai Lama whether he felt this was a viable and worthy way to begin the practice, given that it might be misinterpreted as self-centeredness, which is antithetical to the Bodhisattva ideal. And he looked at her as if she had just said, all the people I teach have heads made of green cheese. Like, are you crazy? He had understood the words, but he really didn't know what she was talking about. This is a man who's traveled a lot, but when he's meeting with the president or the Senate or environmental groups and so forth, they're working on their agendas and they don't talk about their low self-esteem. When he's meeting with Americans. You mean, he said, people really don't feel that they're worthy to be happy and they feel contempt for themselves? She said, yes. And the whole room fell silent because it was obvious he was dealing with a very alien topic. After talking it over a bit more, eventually he turned to the others in the room, about 20 people, many of them Westerners, and he asked how many had experienced this. Just about all the hands went up. In Tibetan culture, this is alien. Like smallpox in the Polynesians 500 years ago, it seems they had not been subjected to this illness before. And then he asked whether in the midst of low self-esteem, people still try to find happiness. And by and large, the answer is yes, people do still try to find happiness, even if they have low self-esteem. So in that way, that he said that shows that people do actually have this kind of underlying compassion for ourselves, and it just gets buried under this more superficial layer of low self-esteem. I thought that was an interesting point. You know, that we still want to be happy. It's like, I'm not really worthy of it, but I really do want to be happy. It's like the surface thing is this low self-esteem, but underneath, we have this natural compassion for ourselves. And which also could imply that it is a quite natural thing, the feeling of loving kindness for ourselves and for others, and compassion for ourselves and others. In the Mahayana teachings, these are qualities of Buddha nature, which is like our true nature, the nature of our mind, that's already the case. We've heard this before probably, but it's just obscured by our conditioned patterns. Like maybe we're trained by our society, and maybe our parents and teachers kind of like train us in low self-esteem. It could be that this happens in our society, but underneath there's actually this it's obscured but natural loving kindness and compassion for ourselves and all beings. That's the nice way that the Mahayana puts this. It's not something that we have to create that's not here. It's already our nature. We just have to uncover it. And one way to do that is through these like mind trainings, which is basically just generating the wish. May I be happy? Oh, okay. May this person be happy. And then after ourself, you know, you can say this silently or aloud to yourself. And you know, with all of these kind of mind training type teachings, just saying the words never works. You actually have to like slow down and feel it and kind of mean it. And maybe at first we can't really feel it or mean it, but if we're quite relaxed, maybe eventually we start to get into it. That's my experience. I think we can start to... It's retraining an old twisted habit. And then with this foundation of feeling okay about being happy ourselves, then naturally we can extend that to others. And the traditional thing is, first you extend it to those really close to you, that you already feel loving kindness towards. You just remind yourself that that's the case. It's very easy to do, so that kind of builds up maybe some self-esteem that, oh, I can practice loving kindness towards a few people in my life. Maybe even when they're even difficult, we can still remember that we love them. Sometimes they say, if you're working on this, maybe don't do it with people that you're particularly attached to. So like, it's okay, and we don't want to eliminate anybody, of course, but as a training thing, it's a little mixed up sometimes if we're really attached to someone, and we're trying to practice this loving kindness, because even though it may be very easy, it's mixed in with, it's not pure just like, may you be happy. It's more like, may you be happy because I know you wish me to be happy too, and you're going to be nice to me. And it's kind of a trade-off or something. It's, I think it, attached love is sometimes like this. So they say, maybe with like a spiritual teacher or something, where we're not so attached to the person, but we really admire them, or any great being in the world, we can, I really just appreciate what they do, and I just wish that they'd be happy. It's less sticky. They sometimes say that, you know, the extreme opposite of loving kindness is hatred, quite obviously. But the, you know, slight opposite that's maybe hard to notice is attachment. It's very similar to pure love, but it's not quite the same. But it looks like it. So first towards close people, then towards kind of neutral people, like you can do like in the line at the supermarket, the checkout counter. Maybe this person, they seem kind of stressed, or even if they're not stressed, even if they seem really happy. Oh, I'm so glad they're happy. May they continue to be, to have the causes of happiness. Or if they seem stressed, I don't know who this person is, and I'll probably never see them again. May they be happy right now. And again, in this way, like, not like may they win the lottery or something, but may they actually just find like ease and joy and spaciousness in the moment. Sometimes it's said that some teachers would say that, like in the traditional monastic context in Buddhism or other religions too, one way to look at like the monastic life of like living alone in a monastery and renouncing family life is like, in order to practice this kind of loving kindness and compassion equanimously towards all beings, to not like single out, if I'm really loving and compassionate here, but like, are there other people on the planet? More like, I think that's a nice way of looking at that traditional practice of actually not just for one's own self-centered peace of mind, but actually to radiate loving kindness and compassion equally toward all beings. I think people like the Dalai Lama, I think we can feel like that's really worked for him. Being a celibate monk his whole life, he doesn't seem like a kind of like crusty, old, stuck-up kind of guy, which is the danger that can happen with that kind of life. He seems like genuinely like he loves everyone. He's a good example of monastic life can really work for people like that. Some say that we have this advantage in American Buddhism, especially where it's not a monastic tradition for the most part, like lay Buddhism, we have the advantage of, we do have more like, there's a lot of family life and all the practice advantages of dealing with all the trials and tribulations of the complexity of such a life, but also there's like family are like it's very natural to feel kindness and compassion towards, and it might even be said like if you're treating your kids with the same kindness and compassion as everybody, you might be considered like a bad parent actually. Like you're supposed to give them a little bit more. And I think that's appropriate actually in family life. So there's these people that you might feel naturally love and compassion for, whereas in a monastic life, some people might not ever get to the point of feeling that for anybody at all. So that's a nice way to turn it, that the advantages of lay practice, right, is that there's some people who it's maybe like quite easy to love. Maybe not always easy, right? But if you're living alone in a cave, you could be in the mountains somewhere, you could be like doing this kind of mind training in this kind of abstract way. But then if somebody actually comes to your cave and says like, excuse me, can I have some of your rice? You might say like, ah, go away. So we get to practice that kind of like kindness towards people that we're close to naturally. So lest we think that this is all like, you know, just in the Theravada and Tibetan traditions, we've got to bring in some Zen on the point here. Dogen, and I think you find this woven through Dogen's wisdom teachings, but here specifically, the Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance is a wonderful fascicle in the Shobo Genzo, really just about kindness and compassion. And I'll just bring up this one section on kind speech. This is one of the four Bodhisattva's methods, a way to enact loving kindness in the speech realm. Kind speech means that when you see sentient beings, you arouse the mind of compassion and offer words of loving care. It is contrary to cruel or violent speech. In the secular world, there's the custom of asking after someone's health. How are you doing? Which is kind of a funny thing, I think, in our culture, because I don't know what to think of it. I think it's a little bit sweet, but I think it's... Sometimes I almost have to laugh. When you pass strangers on the street, it's natural to say, hi, but there's a custom sometimes, very informally, to say, hey, how you doing? Complete strangers, like, how are you doing? You want to know how I'm doing? Like, you don't even know who I am, right? I think it's so funny. And sometimes I'll say, like, oh, good, because that's the generic response. How you doing? Oh, good, thanks. How are you? Or at the checkout counter, hey, how you doing today? That's maybe a little different, because at least you're going to talk to them for the next 20 seconds. But if you're, like, passing somebody, they don't even wait for your response. How you doing? And they just keep walking. It's a funny thing in our culture, language thing. But in a way, it's kind of sweet, even so, I think, right? Because it's like, maybe it's a mind training. It's not like they're really asking how I'm doing, but maybe they're training their subconscious mind to care about how somebody's doing. It's a funny thing. I don't know if other cultures have that or not. It's kind of maybe a modern sort of slang thing. How you doing? How you doing, buddy?
A bow.
Hmm?
A bow.
Bow.
It's just good or better.
Yeah, bow is a good one. And yeah, mm-hmm. Yep. Many cultures have bow. In our little subculture here, we have bow. In the secular world, there's the custom of asking after someone's health. In Buddhism, there's the phrase, please treasure yourself. And the respectful address to seniors, may I ask how you are? It is kind speech to speak to sentient beings as you would to a baby. We sometimes, there are kind of like in the Zen kind of monastic tradition, certain kind of formalities and phrases that we enact in ceremonies, like when the Shuso is entered as the head student, there's some lines that are traditionally done for over the past 1,000 years or so of may your good health continue. These are beautiful days. May your good health continue. You know, thanks for taking care of things. Let me help you take care of them. So it's nice, I think, these customs. And please treasure yourself. You know, I don't know. In Buddhism, there's this phrase. So we're welcome to use it. Please treasure yourself. Some people I notice have sometimes write letters with a salutation at the end. Please treasure yourself. Praise those with virtue. Have compassion for those without it. If kind speech is offered, little by little virtue will grow. Thus even kind speech, which is not ordinarily known or seen, comes into being. You should be willing to practice it for this entire present life. Do not give up world after world, life after life. Kind speech is the basis for reconciling rulers and subduing enemies. Those who hear kind speech from you have a delighted expression and a joyful mind. Those who hear of your kind speech will be deeply touched. They will never forget it. You should know that kind speech arises from kind mind, and kind mind from the seed of compassionate mind. You should ponder the fact that kind speech is not just praising the merit of others. It has the power to turn the destiny of the nation. Big effects with the simple thing of kind speech. And sometimes it's said that loving kindness arises from patience, can lead to kindness. If we're angry at others, we become patient, and then we can start to generate actual kindness. And that kindness becomes a condition for compassion, and that compassion can become a condition for bodhicitta, the bodhisattva's altruistic wish to realize Buddhahood for the benefit of all beings. So this is just adds a little extra thing. May all beings be happy is loving kindness. May all beings be free from suffering is compassion. And then may I realize complete enlightenment, shed all the obscurations to my natural loving kindness and compassion, so that I may wish this fully and be able to benefit everyone completely and impartially. That's like this extra wish we call bodhicitta, the mind of awakening. They're all wishes, actually, but now it's the wish that I wish so much for all beings to be happy and free from suffering that whatever I can do to promote that. And I've heard that in this tradition we say, if I'm a Buddha, a fully awakened Buddha, then I can promote that most fully. So I wish for that now, but only for the sake of all beings. And bodhicitta, this wish, is the condition for Buddhahood. Maybe the main condition is this aspiration to practice in such a way as to completely let kindness and compassion blossom unhinderedly. And Buddhahood is the condition for releasing all beings from suffering. So just to start with this loving kindness, is this, the train gets rolling, can't be stopped. So have any thoughts or questions? Yes.
I agree with everything you've said. Maybe just to be contrary, I don't know, this has occurred to me a number of times, that suffering is necessary. It's a part of the agreement we make when we somehow enter this unknown story we're in. That's how we learn. So yeah. The question is, if our wish for suffering and that it were and there was more suffering,
yeah,
would life have the meaning that it has?
Yeah.
Or maybe you could change. So I would say maybe the prayer could be, could you make
Well, yeah, I don't think we really have to even worry about it disappearing anytime soon either. And I think that's true, and I like how you put it, that we, in a way, we've chosen life in the human realm is, you know, some people might say, I didn't choose this, but in a way, there's we got here, and it, yeah, it's the world of suffering and joy, and yeah, it's a package deal, and so we could even say to honor suffering, because I think it's good, like you mentioned, this part of this life, of all these, of this kind of chain of causality, we could say first that whole this whole process towards Buddhahood and the complete freedom of all beings starts with suffering. We really need it. Because suffering is the condition for practicing loving kindness and compassion and bodhicitta and Buddhahood and saving all beings and so on. So, yeah, we start in a way, we could say we start with suffering. We need that. We're thankful because we can't be a bodhisattva, actually, without it. And so we, yeah, if it starts to get like this, you know, liberation project is working so well that most of the universe is completely free from suffering and there's just a few left, and we think, wait a second, if these last ones go, will the whole thing disappear? Then maybe we can start to worry. I think until then, but it's an interesting question, because even, yeah, may you be free from suffering. I think one way to look at that is, and to practice that kind of wish, is on a very tangible way. When we see someone suffering, they're stressed at the supermarket, may you be free from this particular suffering. And so that you're ready for the next one. Maybe even for the rest of the day, take a break from suffering and stress and anxiety. And then tomorrow you're ready to face the next one. And then I can wish you that again. Wish you that, to be free from it again. Thanks for honoring the suffering here. It's a noble truth, yeah. The truth of suffering. And there's the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. But it's only possible because there's suffering. Bodhisattva path in particular, you could say, the whole thing is based on this compassion because there is suffering. And it doesn't look like it's going to disappear anytime soon. But we meet it in a moment-to-moment way. Wishing for some relief, knowing that, that more will come. Yes.
I was thinking of this a few months ago, that I have a friend that suggested to me, like, make a practice and wishing toward yourself, and I had the same reaction as you initially. And but then I was also thinking about this word all beings, and there's no way that I can not include myself in all.
Exactly.
So, mm-hmm. It starts becoming like, oh, if I say all, but actually I don't mean me, and then it kind of just taints the, it makes it harder to say it all in any way, very wholeheartedly.
Well put, yes, for sure. Exactly. All beings except me. And you know, the similar principle is that it kind of, we put ourselves all on kind of equal ground. Well, I wish it for ourselves, almost like, I'm above that, I'm a bodhisattva. I wish it for you, but like, I don't need that for myself. We kind of like, it's a, almost like there's some pride maybe comes in there. We think that we're above suffering beings, but like, no, to acknowledge our own suffering, however far along the bodhisattva path we might be, ah, yeah, I really like, can get really worked up and really suffer. And when I recognize that, may I be happy, it kind of like puts us all sentient beings on a kind of like level ground in a beautiful way. And then it kind of like helps for that equanimous wishing for everybody. Yeah, so thank you for that point. Yes. Like not wanting to...
Well, if you acknowledge your suffering, I mean, it's like, I think for me, I mean, I kind of know how I've suffered.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old enough to know how much suffer. And I can get kind of apathetic about it or something, you know, rather than just acknowledging it and then working with it.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe another way that we sometimes deal with suffering is like, yeah, well, of course I'm suffering. It's life is suffering, and here it is again. And like, we'll get through it. I think, you know, there's some, and it's okay. There's something like that. But that's just maybe all right. It's better than maybe being, you know, it's some positive thing of like, yeah, we'll get through it. It's part of life. But then to turn it into a practice, I think to really offer that. That wish, it's an opportunity to generate loving kindness instead of just, yeah, we'll get through it. Because we'll get through it is like, there's no real loving kindness there. So almost like it's an opportunity to practice that towards ourselves, more than just neutral, either neutral or like totally sunk down into it. In compassion also, they say that, you know, compassion, the thing that looks kind of close to compassion, but it is not quite, is like maybe like pity, where we're putting ourselves above a little bit. Pity. Or also, would be one version, and another one would be like grief or despair. It's like we're in the name of compassion, we're grieving in a way for the world, but we're starting to wallow in it for ourselves, self-pity or grief for others that's gone beyond, like, we've lost the wish. May you be free from suffering. We're just like, now we're just so enmeshed in this person's suffering that it's just called grief or despair. And that's, they say that, you know, the near opposite to compassion. Whereas the extreme opposite that's obvious is like cruelty. Like, may you suffer. I want to make you suffer. But interesting, despair is not quite compassion. Is another point in here too. Yes.
Sadness. In a way, with this, like I know in my experience, sometimes, and I have to go and write about this. But I know sometimes with sadness, sometimes it creates a sense of connectedness. I feel a sense of connectedness in sadness. So.
Yeah.
But also sometimes, also there's a kind of sadness that is very self-centered too.
Yeah, I think, and we have to acknowledge that we're in it, really be in it and feel that, and have this kind of wish that could take various forms, I think. The wish that may I and all beings find ease in this sadness. And sometimes the ease in sadness is it still has a kind of bittersweet feeling, right? It's not necessarily like, happy doesn't necessarily mean it might be like, oh yeah, it's a very calm, bittersweet kind of peace, kind of mixed with sadness. The Chinese character for compassion, he in Japanese is pronounced, as in the Dai He Shin Dharani, is the great compassion heart Dharani. If in a dictionary, it'll often say sadness instead of compassion. It's what's used to translate karuna, but it also means like sadness. So it's kind of a similar thing.
You know, like sadness is a call to loving kindness.
Yeah.
And like I was at the store and I saw like all these meats laid out. I was kind of sad in a kind of way.
Mm.
But then also like that being like a call to loving kindness made us like creatures. Have this loving kindness.
Yeah.
Everyone has this loving kindness so that they don't feel like they need to kill these things for their
own. Yeah, that's a beautiful example. Mm-hmm. You can feel the sadness and then maybe there's that wish there and the wish kind of turns it and you still maybe feel sad, but that wish is kind of uplifting. There's some to say, oh, Yeah, may all beings be free from suffering and the need to kill each other and so on. Yeah. We dedicate any merit and positive energy arising from this discussion to the complete well-being and freedom from suffering for all beings. May they be happy and have the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them.